Welcome back to the Happy Market Research Podcast. I'm Alexandra and I'm here with Jamin.
Hey.
So today I'm really excited about the topic that we have chosen. We're going to be talking about developing software that works. We're investigating the ways that particularly market research should be driving those business decisions about app development. And Jamin, you obviously have a background in market research, but you have also built several very successful pieces of software. So tell us some simple do's and don'ts that people should be paying attention to.
I mean, to start, when you're going to develop a new application, you want to make sure that the customer is in the absolute center of that. You know, I'm exposed to lots of startups, and more often than not, the startup concept is coming out of the founder's brain. And oftentimes, they've actually not even identified or had a conversation with who they think the target market is. And so to start, I would say pick up the phone, use LinkedIn, get on Twitter, whatever it is, build out a group of stakeholders inside of a specific industry that you're targeting and hear what the pain points are. You see, what software does is it creates a bridge to a solution. So there's a problem, there's that desired outcome is, and then technology just connects those two things, right? Just brings them together. And so in order to do that effectively, you've got to be damn sure that you've got the customer's pain point articulated correctly, as well as the solution.
And what makes software work just in general?
So there's a technical part of that, which has to do with the context. So a good example is there's an app that I'm working on right now, helping returning or retiring soldiers who are entering into civilian life readjust to that change in culture. So in that context, you know, I'm looking at iOS needs to be up and running first, and then I'm focusing in on Android, which is a much larger segment and has some additional layers of complexity to it. So, you know, obviously anytime that you're making software, it needs to be in the context of where it's going to be utilized. I would say mobile first, if not mobile only. I mean, you see that now with Snapchat and Instagram, highly successful. A lot of people I know don't even use laptops anymore. They're starting to have exclusively moved to tablets and their smart devices. So yeah.
Excellent. So how do you determine value, or how do you figure out what people need? How do you close that gap that you were talking about with startups having that audience and figuring it out?
The very, very first place I would start is conversations with potential customers. Uncover their pain points. Don't ask leading questions. Leave it open-ended. If you don't know what an open-ended question is, talk to somebody that does. Asking the right
question. Also Google. You could Google that.
You can Google that. Absolutely right. Yeah, right. I mean, you know, that's a great point. Anything you don't know, you can immediately find out by Googling it, right? But I would also say that it's a lot of work. So knowing the answer, in the words of G.I. Joe, is half of it. So having the knowledge is half of it. Then the execution of it is the other half. And the execution is where I see a lot of people falling down. Because honestly, it's a lot easier and less threatening to just jump into development on something as opposed to taking the time up front to get to know the sector, to get to know the customer, and to thoroughly vet and understand what their needs are.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of those things where you put in the effort up front and it saves you so much on the back.
You know, and it sounds so stupid to say that. Like, it's like, well, kind of duh, of course. But the reality is it isn't playing out like that in the marketplace. A lot of people will have, whether it's just their own experience that they're drawing from or just what they think is, you know, the Uber for you fill in the blank, right? Of course, it's going to be huge. The Uber for house cleaning. Or whatever. So it doesn't work that way. It doesn't play that way in real life, right? You've got to get, you know, one of my favorite stories, and I think it was in Lean Startup, if I'm not mistaken, there was a online grocer that was getting established. And the first thing they did before they wrote one line of code was the CEO traveled around to mom groups inside of his area with his head of sales. And they just tried to close one account for, I think it was, you know, a handful of dollars, we'll call it $10, I don't remember how much it was. And finally they got a customer, a buyer. And so instead of building their app at that point, they scheduled a time with her where they went to her house every single week and she ordered, in quotation marks, her groceries from them directly. And then Monday they would go do the shopping and delivered it to her by hand. So what that did was it uncovered where the shortcut opportunities for shortcuts are through technology, you see. And that's where they would, and they kept selling the same way, a non-scalable solution, the CEO and the head of sales kept scaling an online business by meeting with mom groups and seeing who they could convert, until which time they didn't have they had too many moms to meet with. So then they literally moved to an email form, right? So this sort of iconic story does such a great job of saying that, you know, you can apply technology in a very specific way to build out your app based on your current pipeline. And that will, I think, in a lot of ways be faster to not just revenue, you'll have a faster product to market, and you'll get to your product market fit faster as well.
Yeah, that's really interesting, of almost like pragmatically step by step and manually figuring out what that actual product service is and then implementing the technology around it. I think it's really interesting the way that automation works, because the minute you automate something, you lose visibility into what it's actually doing. Mm-hmm. Or even like if you're to a certain extent delegating tasks, which we're delegating tasks to technology as opposed to people more and more, right? And so the minute you do that and it goes out of your sphere, you're losing visibility into it. So having that visibility on your first entree into whatever your app idea is important.
Yeah.
All right, so what are some ways that market research can be deployed to maximize what many companies are doing, especially in the app or web app space, wherever it may be?
Yeah, it's all about bridging the conversation, right? So market research is basically customers' feedback at scale. That's where market research fits. If you need 1,000 people because you have a really large market to tell you what they think about something, you got to do a survey. You can't do that many IDIs. Now, there has been an evolution in artificial intelligence and machine learning, where I'm thinking about Remesh specifically, but there's other companies out there that are doing similar things, where you can have a live, moderated, in real time discussion with a group of 1,000 participants and actually have that a productive interaction with them in a open or unstructured way. So it feels a lot like a focus group or IDI, but it's happening in this very different sort of framework that is understandable by both, so that the AI is basically filtering out the feedback and consolidating and feeding back then that consolidated feedback from the consumer's insight to the moderator, so that then the moderator can react and continue to dive into the why. But generally speaking, you know, tools that exist out there for conducting surveys there's at least hundreds, varying from free to very, very expensive and easy to use, right? And to very complex. And so there is the right tool in order to address that thing. But always to start, you start small, get a small group of customers, stakeholders. You know, thinking about the grocery example, he had a corral of 4 or 5 customers that he was able to get real feedback from and get to know those customers intimately, right? I mean, it's almost like ethnography, where you need to move into the customer, see the customer, experience what the customer is experiencing in real time, so you can understand viscerally what those pain points are, and then how the solution needs to be implemented so that it's easy, lightweight, and is going to be adopted quickly.
Yeah, excellent. Okay, so I kind of want to take a look at like 3 different potential stages that someone might be in. So let's just say you're at the idea phase. You have the idea for what you think will be the next big app. What sort of market research should that person deploy before they even get started?
When I think about a company's valuation, I break it down into 3 easy categories, right? So the first one is, who's their total addressable market? And how big is that space? Who's going to use this thing? That's an important question. The second thing I look at is always team. So do they have experience in this space? Have they done something like this before? Although I don't necessarily see that as a prerequisite, I do see that as a benefit if there are team members that have built software before. It's team, TAM, and traction. Traction is the third one. So, you know, have they had traction? Could be as simple as, hey, I've got 5 potential customers that say they want to use this, and this is why, right? So it's some level of validation. Ideally, they're doing $1,000 a month of reoccurring revenue. So, you know, if a company is just at the very inception point, I would say you want to focus on those 3 things first before you write any code, before you do anything at all. Secure that team, get the experts, the subject matter experts on your side. It doesn't even have to be expensive. Like, you know, this app that I'm starting, I've got through LinkedIn, I connected with an author on Psychology Today. She's a PhD, well-respected, and she's got expertise in this specific area that I'm honing in on. And as I'm talking with her, you know, she's now on a retainer basis. This is costing just hundreds of dollars a month, so not even thousands of dollars, in order to have her oversight and leverage her expertise to guide the app development. That adds tremendous value and confidence for both investors, but ultimately the market.
Awesome. So then second phase is, let's say they've already created the app. Maybe they haven't done any market research yet, and they're ready to launch. What should they do before they launch?
Yeah, I mean, before they launch the app, the first thing you want to do is make sure that the user experience is perfect. So, I mean, failure to launch is catastrophic. You only get one first impression. I love that adage. Super simple, right? There's so many great examples of a company going to market prematurely and then failing. So the first thing you have to do is make sure that not only is it working, but it's working in the way that it's intuitive for the consumer.
Excellent. And then what about a company that has already built an app? They've been on market for years. How should market research help them, you know, even if their ship is sort of fully out at sea?
Yeah, so the second stage, going kind of rewinding a little bit to that, getting ready to launch, the way that you do that, those UX testing, is usually through in-person observations. So I did this for Walt Disney actually for years. I actually built a in-house usability app, or facility on one of their properties in the Bay Area. So what we'd do is we'd recruit 12 respondents, and they would just sequentially do 30 minutes with us every day. And they would just use, in those days it was a website, in order to do their daily tasks. And that provided us a lot of insight, not just in terms of, is it easy to use, but then also, are people going to use it? Like, oh wow, I would do this, or this is really frustrating, I would never use a site like this. And the last part that I thought was really interesting is it also identified where the highest level of value was inside of the apps. And that is just gold for marketers, because that's exactly the talking points when for your social ads and, you know, wherever your go-to-market strategy is.
Awesome.
So the, you know, at that stage, you definitely want to make sure you've honed in and are doing regularly these, what they're called, IDIs, or in-depth interviews. That discipline needs to be part of your whole life forever. That never goes away, but it gets augmented as the volume of consumers gets bigger. And that's where surveys fits in, right? If I only have five customers, I don't need to do anything except pick up a phone or send an email. That's all I need to do, right? And I've got a complete view of my market. Or not market per se, but of my customers. On the flip side of it, if I've got millions, then I absolutely have to do surveys in order to be able to get to the scale of feedback that I need.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time, Jamin, and for your in-depth answers on these questions. And thank you to everybody who's listening in. We will talk to you again tomorrow.